It's Tuesday the 13th of December and you're listening to the Red Army Roundup. I'm your host Paul Hinton and as ever I'm joined by Sean Phillips and Aaron Wren. Hello there gents.
Hello there Paul.
Good evening Paul.
And we've got a busy show tonight. We're going to look back at the three games the Devils have played this week. Game up in Dundee, some sort of home game on Saturday and then a game again on Sunday against Sheffield. Pretty sure the Saturday one didn't happen. We'll have a look at the player of the week and then all of your Ramite suggestions and a couple of talking points coming out of that before previewing a weekend against a couple of teams you haven't played in ages in Sheffield and Nottingham on Saturday and Sunday respectively. So we've plenty to get through. We'll crack off with Wednesday night and the first leg of the Challenge Cup quarter-final against Dundee. The away leg up in Dundee due to work and other commitments. I think Aaron was the only one out of us that watched the game. A game that Devils ran out 4-1 victors in. From purely looking at the game sheet, Aaron, it looks like Devils obviously scored halfway through the first, and then the rest of the goals all come in the last 12 minutes of the third. Was the game as dull as the game sheet would make you think it was?
Very, very, very much so. It was very flat for both teams. Didn't seem like it was a lot of goal. I think the Devils got that goal in the first and not slacked off, but let Dundee get into the game a little bit. But as performance-wise, I don't think any team was there to win. It was just literally anything but score, hit. It was just really, really boring, and I struggled to watch it, to be honest. But the Devils won 4-1. I'm not going to jinx us, but that's a good standing to get us through to the semi-final. So happy with the result. Just a disappointing game.
Yeah, it's especially Devils scoring 7.5 minutes in through Jake Morissette. You can understand them sitting back there, going up to Dundee, getting a one goal lead, even coming back with a draw. I think we discussed last week. Not a terrible result bringing them back to Ulster in Wales. If you'd say Dundee looked that flat, it's quite surprising. I think they were missing three imports. Joey Sides, who was massively influential against us in the game up there on the triple header, was one of the ones missing. So maybe even from their point of view, they thought 1-0 was a result that would have kept him in the tie when perhaps, I'm not sure what the injury situations are, but maybe they'd have had a slightly fuller bench going forward. Obviously in the third, Joey Martin got a goal, Dundee quickly responded, and then Andrew Hotham and Sean Bentivoglio, as Aaron said, gave Devils a comfortable 4-1 victory and a nice cushion going into that second leg. I think important, Sean, as well, that it's not as busy as other teams, but a lot of games come in over the festive season. Hopefully it won't be the most trying of nights for the Devils next Wednesday.
Yeah, I think 4-1 is a very, very good result to bring home. Dundee are a good side. I think Mark Lefebvre said post-game that a few of his players were quite lethargic, the imports underperformed, and the Brits were probably their standout guys. You mentioned they were missing Joey Sides. I think Kale Tanaka, who's normally a really, big energy, logs a lot of minutes, can have a major impact on the game. And if we'd come away with just the one goal lead or, the tie, you sort of feel if he was back in the lineup, you would make that sort of difference. But, that's a tie that, at this stage, three goals, we know better than anyone that three goals is not an, you can turn it around. It's a whole new game. If we can beat them by three in this game, why can't they beat us by three in the next game sort of thing? But if we come out and grab, a goal, I think if we score the first goal, I think the tie is over. And even if, I think if we score on the night, I think the tie is over, to be quite honest with you. Yeah, and with the fixture congestion coming up to this time of year, that's probably the best sort of best sort of result we could have hoped for, and we can hopefully give the fourth line a bit more ice time. Hopefully you'd like to think rest guys, our key performers, guys like Joey Martin, who logs a lot of minutes, might like to even think that he'll maybe even sit the game. If not, he won't play any penalty kill, that sort of thing. So
yeah.
Ideal for us, really.
Yeah, it'd be good to sort of mix the lines up, mix the ice time and some of the lines up, and you said, get some different special teams units out there. You'll be experienced as much as resting others. Oh, God, we've finished talking about Dundee and we really are going to have to talk about Saturday.
What happened on Saturday? I don't remember anything happening Saturday. Do you remember anything happened on Saturday, Aaron?
Aaron's fallen off the chair. He's, you know, so doesn't remember what happened on Saturday. He's fallen off. It was a blur. We are going to have to talk about it. There's no other way around it. Nottingham came to Cardiff. A team that Devils have really struggled against this year. We've spoken about it a couple of times now. We've struggled to score against them. I think in the three games prior, we'd only scored in two of those. We managed. We're now 2 from 12 because obviously everyone knows Nottingham won 8-0. But the game was over inside 5 minutes. Like I just feel that the first 2 minutes totally killed us. We did our usual trick. We started slow. So slow, in fact, that Ryan McGrattan managed to score on 51 seconds, his first point in Britain. And then on 150, just a minute later, 152, Stephen Schultz with a bit of a bullet, put Panthers 2-0 in front. And the Devils just looked absolutely shell-shocked. We couldn't get our sticks on the puck. And I was surprised at that stage that we didn't call a timeout. And then when Schultz scored the third on 5 minutes, with us still probably having created nothing, I was amazed that the players weren't called over to try and sort it out. But all that we did was pull Ben Bounds, which he wasn't happy about, and I also thought it was quite harsh given that he'd been given no protection in those first 5 minutes. Sean,
yeah, I completely agree. You mentioned that we started slow. I actually think in the first shift of the game we I know that's a terrible sort of way to sort of look at a game, but the first shift out there, we really came out looking to play physical. We had some good energy, a good short spell in the offensive zone where we created, we sort of passed the puck around the perimeter and looked to get a good opening. And then to sort of start that game with a good shift in us, I think we started with the Haddad line, with the Haddad, Myers and Guillaume Doucet. And it was really high energy. We started off well, tried to go and grab the game by the nuts and, dictate the pace of the play. And then they score. And then we lose complete track of the entire game plan. And we just have nothing to give in that first period. I don't blame Ben Bounds, and I completely agree with you, Paul. He was given no protection or very little protection. And I think he cracked his stick as he left the ice and absolutely... I think his lungs were going to pop out. That's how loud he shouted at the bench on his way past, because they let him down. And as you said, game over within the opening 5 minutes and 10 seconds, in my eyes.
And it was game over, but I'm not Mr. Optimist, but 3-0 with 55 minutes to play is in no way an insurmountable object. We've just talked about Dundee can possibly do it in 60 minutes. We only had 5 minutes less. But for whatever reason, it was a shorthanded goal next. I just can't talk about the rest of them. But we offered hardly anything. We took two minor penalties all game. One reffing penalty, one holding the stick. And I know it doesn't change anything. It doesn't make any difference. But if we had a list of penalties and it was because we were playing the body and we got called for a couple of boardings, a couple of elbows because they were borderline hits, I wouldn't have felt much better, but I'd have felt a little bit better. And Aaron, the thing that it reminds me of is the 11-0 defeat in Sheffield a couple of years ago. The third period, we went out there, we played horrible hockey. We crossed the line, there were some sort of bad hits. Like we no-choiced someone into a bit of a fight. And we had Sheffield the following weekend, and we beat Sheffield at home because some of their players were looking for revenge. We got them rattled, and we play Nottingham on Sunday. And would you have liked to have seen us gone out there and just done something like that, or did you think saving ourselves for Sheffield was the better idea, which I suppose is the other way of looking at it?
In that retrospect, I don't think we should have tried to goon it up as people would say. I think the most disappointing thing is that we didn't show any heart after that. Like, it was all it was no energy. You had a few guys that was trying to turn the game round, and it just wasn't happening. But I think trying to goon it up, it wouldn't have benefited us. And it, you know, we could have cross-checked someone from behind, and we could have had like a penalty reviewed or something that could have gone against us. So I don't think we should have done that. But the game overall was just a disappointment. It was no heart, no passion. It was just a weak performance, and we deserved to get smashed 8-0.
Yeah, if a performance has ever deserved a scoreline like that, that was definitely one of them. Sean, so that's, you know, I don't know whether it's just my frustration. I still, even though we had the Sheffield game, how many big games we've got, you know, part of me for the Rattling Panthers, just part of me to give, you know, what was a decent crowd for a Saturday in December, something other than a drubbing to remember, you know, or do you think, or are you more sensible like Aaron?
In the sense, I can see where Aaron's coming from, and I also agree that, you know, we didn't, if we had gooned it up, you know, you risk suspensions and all that sort of thing, and, you know, we played Sheffield the next night, as you just mentioned. But I also think that's when, you know, we went five, you know, at the end of the first period, the team had no interest in trying to get back in that game because they knew it wasn't going to happen, and they knew we were playing Sheffield the next night. Even at 3-0, I feel like that was the mentality. You just said that 3-0 wasn't, you know, the be-all and end-all. It wasn't absolutely game over. And I would agree with you in most cases. But the guys came out so flat, even after that third goal, that they looked like they were already looking forward to the next game tomorrow. There was, you know, those people, a lot of people paid good money to come and watch that game, and the team let them down. Not everyone who was at the game on Saturday was going to be at the game Sunday. They deserve some sort of performance. And if that comes with a fight, as you say, then I can appreciate that, but I think, you know, as a season ticket holder, who's going to be there the next night, I'm glad that we didn't goon it up, get bans, get suspensions, absolutely throw all our eggs in one basket and try and get back in that game when we had the big game the next night. And as for sending a message, you know, it's hard to gauge whether it would have truly sent a message or whether Nottingham are the sort of team to take the mentality of we've got them rattled, just play into their hands on Saturday. Because I don't think that they would have risen to it. I genuinely don't think they would have risen to it, knowing the same thing that we play them on Saturday.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, you could sort of highlighted in the, I think it was in the build-up to the sixth or seventh goal of the second when, not long after Christian Kudrok had checked Joey Martin, a check that I didn't actually catch in my line of sight. But it left Joey Martin without his helmet on and, you know, tempers got up. And, you know, Batch went for Kudrok, you know, just stood centre ice with him, trying to get him to drop the gloves. And, you know, Nottingham scored because of that. But, you know, you could just see Kudrok wasn't interested. The job was done for Nottingham. And he wasn't going to drop the gloves for anything because there's no reason. So I suppose, you know, without going out there and throwing those really bad hits that make Nottingham react, I suppose that perhaps there wasn't a way of doing it.
And then they get you suspended as well.
And then, yeah, you're looking at suspensions and all sorts, which in the long run is obviously isn't good, but just a real horrible night to be a Devils fan, that was. It was not pleasant at all. We're done with that. We'll talk about Sunday some more. I reckon we can probably talk about this a little bit more. We just seem to be playing Sheffield all the time at the moment. And, well, while it's going the way it's going, I'm quite happy. But, you know, we made it 4-0 against Sheffield in the league. And you've got to wonder, have we ever got to that stage, you know, in a league campaign against them? Who knows? Sean, talk about the game. Talk about the, you know, and I think the last time Sheffield came in, it was a very cagey, very tense first period that had, you know, resulted in no goals. No goals in the first period this time, but, you know, a totally, totally different 20 minutes of hockey we watched.
Well, totally different from the 20 minutes before. I thought, I'm just going to talk overall about the game because I thought that was a tremendous game of hockey, and it had absolutely everything in it. There were some absolutely incredible goals on display. You had a fight with Josh Batchelor and Guillaume Debienne. You know, we'll come on to it very shortly, but a penalty shootout, some big saves. And I will say I'm glad to, I am really, really glad to get the points on the board. But overall, I think that, I genuinely think that Sheffield created the better amount of chances. I think that they, we looked scared of them again. We genuinely looked like we were trying to play like we did on the road against them at times. And I feel like we sort of drifted away from what's made us successful against them this year is when we've gone out and tried to go out there and win the game rather than sort of be scared of Sheffield and their speed. And I feel like if we had played our best game, we could have won that. And I think Sheffield did play their best game. And we may have been lucky in aspects of it. And ultimately, I think we should be very, very fortunate to have won that game.
I find that quite surprising. And I'll ask Aaron quick, you know, your thoughts on the game. You know, did you take that from it that, you know, Sheffield the better team? For me, I thought we definitely had, I felt we had the better of the first period, which isn't reflected in the shots. But how did you think the game went as a whole, Aaron?
First period, I thought, was literally just end-to-end hockey, you know, shots on both goalies, well, obviously more on bounds, but shots on both nets, bit of aggression, you know, all our guys come out finishing their hits, playing hard, winning puck battles, and I agree with the Paul, I do think we had the better of the first period, but the second period, definitely, I'd say, in my opinion, was all Sheffield. And the same in the third, I just think they outplayed us. Their speed is just something we can't compete with, and they're definitely just one of the better teams. Well, I wouldn't say they're the best team in the league, but because I think we are, obviously, but they're definitely up there, and their speed is frightening. That space they get on the big ice and the passes they make is extraordinary, and it was just an amazing game to watch. There was no complaints from me regards to penalties or anything like that. But as for the game, it was just fantastic, and I was glad we came away with the 2 points. I was hoping we'd do it in regulation time, but a shootout win will do me fine, especially with the shootout goal we've seen.
It was something special, as you said. Yes, as you know, Sean mentioned, first period, you know, sort of the main talking point, you'd be in the fight between Josh Batch and Kim Zabian. You know, a good stand-up fight that you've really got the crowd going. You know, which it's something to mention that, you know, after the previous night, I think it would have been easy for the crowd to come out and, you know, for the atmosphere to be flat. But even before the game, most people I spoke to were optimistic of a response from the Devils following the night before. And, you know, obviously there was a video put together, you know, talking about that very fact that that was the night for the response. It really did seem to get the crowd pumped and got straight behind the team. You know, the fight kept that, you know, going. And the Devils played some really, probably the hardest hitting hockey they've played in Ice Arena Wales for the period. You know, summed up, Davey Phillips took a slashing penalty after Patrick Bordelot had tried to run him over, run him through the boards in the corners. And, you know, Mike Hicks quite rightly calling the retaliation slash. Always good to see.
I just want to throw in, Paul, that I do agree that that first period was absolutely incredible. And I think the crowd maybe went a little bit flat sort of halfway through the first when, you know, we'd had so much good play and hadn't managed to get on the scoreboard. And that's when, you know, Batch, you know, I think if Batch hadn't had that fight 5 minutes in, then the crowd would have gone extremely, extremely flat. And that sort of kept the atmosphere going as it was starting to sort of tick off. Because the pre-game, the buzz was incredible. I thought before face-off, that's one of the best atmospheres I've ever seen at Ice Arena Wales.
Most definitely. And at the end of the first period, I did comment to a couple of people that, you know, Sheffield had done their job. We'd come out as we had to do as a response. We, you know, thrown a lot at them. You played physical, and they stopped us scoring, which was, you know, probably the main thing on the game plan. I'm still baffled that the official shots show that Sheffield have shot 14-7 in that period, because it really doesn't feel, or didn't feel like it was that type of period, but there we go. So I was a little bit worried that Sheffield had done their job. But the second period started with Sheffield taking an obvious too many men call. And on the resulting power play, Joey Haddad put the Devils in front. A nice, well-worked power play goal. And something that we struggled a little bit on, power play goals, the last few weeks. So that was nice to see, 2 minutes in. And from there on in, it became all Sheffield, as Sean and Aaron have said. And before the thorn in our side this season, Colton Fretter tied Sheffield levels, Sean.
Yeah, and it was a really, really, really good goal from Joey Haddad. And I think you'll feel a bit disappointed that it wasn't his second, because just before that he dangled around three people and it was unbelievable. Unfortunately, it was awesome, really, really good, and unfortunately placed the shot a bit wide. And then he got his goal. And yeah, you said Colton Fretter, the ultimate thorn in our side. He's their best player. I don't think there's that much doubt about it. He is genuinely one of the most skillful players in the league. And I think going into the second period break, it was probably a fair reflection of the game. We dominated most of the first. We had good spells in the second, but in the second half of that second period, Sheffield were by far the dominant force, I feel.
Yes, yeah, I think that's more than fair to say. And games like that, you're happy that you're tied, and you're sometimes looking at a bit of magic to get yourselves back in the game. And four and a half minutes into the third period, and Patrick Astling produced a goal that sent Iserina Wales into raptures. Me and you, Sean, lost our minds.
It certainly sent the gantry into raptures that we were stood on, yeah.
Yeah, up on the gantry, doing the game stuff. And, Sean, myself, the couple of others, just absolutely lost our minds as Joey Martin played Astling through on net, but he wasn't away and sort of came in almost backwards and backhand into the roof. And Aaron, I'm pretty sure you'll have loved it, because I know you do love a backhand goal.
It was, I'm speechless. Like, it was literally one of the best goals I've ever witnessed in my entire life. The finish was spectacular, but I think just the layoff pass
pass from Joey Martin, yeah.
When he played the pass, I was like, oh, and then it was just back the net, backhand. It was amazing. One of my favorite things from a hockey. Well, one of my favorite things in my entire life. I don't even think, even if I have kids, it'll be better than that goal.
Childbirth, and Patrick Astling's, goal against the Steelers.
I'll play it at your first birthday party.
I think that means you have to, by law, you have to name your child whatever Patrick Astling Wren. Or call Patrick it Paddy. His middle name has to be Paddy.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I'm happy with that.
we'll run it past your girlfriend later. I'm sure she'll agree. But for you saying that from the second that the puck left Joey Martin's stick, I watched Patrick Astling in on it by going, funny, just strange noises, because you just sensed something was going to happen. It was a short-lived joy when old Matthew Roy, as I will insist on calling him, tied the game up again 3 minutes later. And then it did become, as Sean said, it's sort of a little bit like, a reminder of the old away games in Sheffield. It was a Devils, not clinging on, but Sheffield definitely having the better of the chances in those last 12 minutes, and a couple of big saves from Ben Bounds and a massive call from Mike Hicks. One of those bizarre things that I can't remember before the last time when a referee has discussed a decision with a goal judge, and then the next time against Sheffield, obviously, when some woman had a chat with him, and the very next time they come to Cardiff, some bloke puts his light on by mistake and ends up having a chat with the referee. It's little things like that you couldn't make up. And
biblical, almost biblical.
It is. It's written in the stars. And yet again, the decision went for us as well, which for about the 50th time sent Paul Thompson's arms up in the air. Like, he was trying to start a Mexican wave all night. He is an irate character on the bench when he's in
Arena. Yeah.
It's probably the nicest way of putting it. And it has been said that, you know, the goal line technology that we do have in Ice Arena Wales that isn't available to use did show that the puck hadn't fully crossed the line. So, you know, credit to Mike Hicks and the goal judge for yet again coming to the right decision, because it wasn't Hicks last time.
I've seen a lot of that all over Twitter, and I think it was Frozen Steel that put a screenshot of the game highlights. And the angle of it is, you know, it does, I will say, from the angle, it looks in. But you also can't see how high in the air, you know, 100% looks in. But if you have a camera directly above the goal when a puck is in the air, that is going to give you the best view. And as you said, the people who were in charge of that, and I've heard from very good sources, that it did not cross the line.
Oh, yeah. The people who said it would 100% have said if it was a goal.
Yeah, agreed,
They would have known how much it would have annoyed Paul Thompson, but, you know. Even Dave Sims said on the replay he saw, well, if he was doing the Steeler updates, that it was in agreement, yet they still decided to jump onto the picture and, you know, insist it was a goal. But it wasn't a goal, and that sent us into overtime. And, you know, 3-on-3 is always exciting. We've got a really good 3-on-3 unit. Sheffield, as we've said, are another quick team. So, you know, it promised to be and turned out to be a massively end-to-end period. For 3 minutes anyway, Sheffield hit the post early on. In overtime, the Devils made a couple of good chances. And just, 3 minutes into the five-minute overtime period, going along the blue line, not really any danger. For reasons that I'm sure only he knows and he may not even know, Gleeson 48 threw one of the biggest slashes onto another player's stick you'll probably ever see.
Went through his legs. Slashed his stick and went through him.
it was just one of the most blatant penalties you'll ever see. You know, Mike Hicks 100% right, arm up in the air, and Fournier went and sat for what we hoped would be a minute and 52 seconds, but, you know, a 4-on-3 power play for that long, I had absolutely no hope that we were going to manage to eke it out to penalty shots, and somehow we did. And, you know, Aaron, I think probably never heard penalty shots cheered quite that vigorously.
Yeah, it was just it was so tense. I know everyone always say, like, well, for me anyway, the Sheffield Cardiff rivalry is definitely one of my favourites, and every game is always a thriller. And, you know, it went to the shootout, and Bounds, well, the first shot on Bounds, the guy messed up. I can't remember who took the shot. He messed up. Then Mo messed up. Then Bounds made two amazing stick pokes to keep us in the game. Then Martin, of all, one of the best people to handle a puck and shoot on net ever in this league, misses. It's all down to Patrick Asselin. And what do you know? He comes up trumps again and scores another beautiful backhander, and Moose had nothing to say about that one, and it was spectacular, absolutely spectacular. If that was a cup final, I'd be naked.
You'd still be drunk, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I'd be drunk, Sean. I'd be on hardcore drugs right now.
We at Red Army Roundup do not condone the use of drugs at all. And drinking responsibly as well. We do condone that. We don't not condone it. And you said Moose couldn't do anything about it. He did have the best seat in the house to watch the puck go in as he turned and watch Patrick Asselin skate round him and tap it in.
I don't know. My seat was quite good. My seat was quite good.
You did have a lovely view of that.
My favourite part about the goal, though, was the fact that Moose went all the way over to the one side. And when he faced the back of the net, Patrick Asselin didn't even shoot the puck yet. And he just literally watched the shot come in and drift over the line. And,
It went so slow. It went so slow. And the worst thing is if it's going quick, and then it hits the post and it's done. But it was going so slow, I didn't know whether it was going to hit the post or go straight and in.
I was convinced that puck was just going to sit on the goal line. It was just going to sit there.
But it didn't.
No, but you know, Aaron mentioned that the two saves from Ben Bams on Armstrong and Fretter, you know, at that falling aside.
Oh, yeah.
To get those two poke, you know, poke checks, almost having the wrong word with a goalie, but, you know, fantastic to, you know, to shut out Sheffield, but he's not going to get any credit, unfortunately, for him, because all everyone's going to remember is Patrick Aston and that hell of a penalty shot. So that was the weekend. like the definition of a mixed bag weekend. You know, worth noting that Sheffield lost in Belfast on the Saturday night, so overall, we gained a point on Sheffield on the weekend, and if you'd have said that, I think if you'd have said that to us at the end of Saturday, we'd have bit your arm off. If you'd have told Sheffield they'd have lost both games and only lost a point on us, I think they'd have bitten your arm off as well. So, in some ways, both teams probably relieved that the damage they had wasn't as bad as it could have been, if I've worded that in any sort of way that makes sense. And, you know, Sheffield are obviously going to be looking at Saturday as a massive chance for revenge. But that was the weekend, and it's time as ever to choose a player of the week. Sort of feel like mainly he's going to be chosen from Sunday, given that the lack of performance on Saturday. I haven't gone first for ages, so I will pick first. And I think my pick is one of the only players who could have come out of Saturday's game against Nottingham with his head held high, one of a handful, if that. And also had a great game on Sunday, you know, getting the opening goal and, you know, made some lovely moves, put his body around all night. And capped off what's been a good sort of month or so for him, but an absolutely excellent weekend, I thought, for Joey Haddad, who gets my vote. Sean, who's your pick?
Yeah, absolutely agree. I think that, you know, Joey Haddad is the sort of person who doesn't... I don't think Joey Haddad's had a bad game this year. And he worked very hard. He always works hard. As you said, one of the only players who could come out of Saturday's game with an inch of pride and just kept it going on Sunday, just worked his nuts off all game, managed to grab himself a goal, should have probably got a second one, and ultimately, yeah, on balance, I think, through the course of the weekend, he's my player of the week.
Well, we've already got a pick, but Aaron, have we got a clean sweep, or do you have another selection?
Of course it's clean sweep. You know, he never does anything wrong. He scores goals, and when he took on them three players and he didn't score on Sunday, I was devastated for him because it was such a good play. And if I played against him, I'd probably want to knock his head off his shoulders because he's such an annoying player. He plays such a good game, and there's not a lot of bad things you can say about him. He's just fantastic. So, three out of the three.
Well, congratulations to Joey Haddad, the unanimous Red Army Roundup Player of the Week. And we'll move on from everyone's second favourite feature of the Red Army Roundup show to everyone's favourite feature. It's time for Ramite.
Woo!
We need a jingle. I've just realised, so.
Yeah, Aaron, get on it.
I draw things. I don't sing things.
He draws the theme tune, but he doesn't sing the theme tune. Sean, I think you've got the before we had a lot of things through, you know, throughout the week for all three games. Quite a bit of hate around Saturday night for some reason, but thank you to everyone for contributing. It's you know, nice to see, you know, a lot of people getting involved. So, what did we have, Sean?
Okay, we had concerning Wednesday's game. We had Matt Millard, who said he hated the commentary, getting the scorers wrong. It wasn't Richie, and Chris Smart. Opposite view of him, said he loved the commentary full stop. Such an engaging man. I don't know if he's being serious or not. And I think sarcasm may have been involved there. Dundee Stars like did chip in and say that an old dog had to step in at the last minute, and it was either that or no webcast. So we love Dundee Stars Live for that. On to Saturday, Matt Mellard again said he hated that Weekman and Panthers only turn up against us and go missing every game against Sheffield this season. Mark Phillips said he hated every minute and loved absolutely nothing. Sean DW14 said he even hated the Zorb football, as it was as subpar as the hockey. And Neil Westlake said he hated trying to work out why we played the way we did. He kept shaking his head, saying, knowing that we were better than this. Kevin Purse said he hated the lack of passion and heart shown by the team. It was like they did not care. there was nothing to love. Matthew Bouguer said Piggott and Lewis have great character shown in that game. And Chris Smart said that he loved it when it was over. Lastly, I believe it was Dominic Bate who said that the beer was cold. Oh no, we did have one more, sorry, from AL Devils, who said, last night's game depressed me to the point I ended my 2-year fast food abstinence and had a greasy BK. Thanks a lot, Devils. I thought that was awesome. I really enjoyed that.
Well, I hope that AL Devils enjoyed their greasy BK after 2 years away. They didn't tell us if they enjoyed it or not, so...
Yeah, let us know.
There was a small win for you out of that debacle.
Chris Smart then said the next day on Sunday, I love that we won. I hate that I feel about 20 years older as a result, but 8-0 still hurts. Rhianna Reby at Dayton Devil said that she hated Saturday and loved Sunday. Kevin Jones said, can we please play in black? I'm guessing that's because of the good result in black. Lewis James said that Ben Bounds played well tonight. And that was his Ramite. Going on to it. Tony Dickens said he loved the passion from the fans and the team on Sunday, coming back after a bad result on Saturday. And he hated that the Steelers equipment guy took the sticks away sharpish after the game before Thompson could have his tantrum. Hashtag Ramite. A great one from Tony Dickens there. As you said, thank you, Paul, to everyone who did send us a Ramite. Make sure you do put the hashtag Ramite so we can find them all nice and easily. We do have one actually from Alan Wilcox. Said he hated hearing that we lost 8-0 and then hearing that our main man, Patrick Aslin, stole the show. And then we did have one more, which we left this one to last just so we can tie it into a topic of conversation. And that was from Claire Millard, who said, hated the booing. One shocking result doesn't deserve that. This team has taken us 11 points clear to date. Hashtag perspective. Aaron, what are your thoughts on the people who booed following the 8-0 drubbing against the Nottingham Panthers and also those who left early?
Me personally, I wouldn't boo the team. If we win 8 games or 10 games with similar results and we're sitting at the bottom of the table, I agree, boo all you want, take a stand, don't even go to the game, just do anything to get things changed. But it was our first loss in, I think, 6 games, and it's only our 3rd league game that we've lost altogether, I think. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
4-5.
You weren't right, but I was louder than Sean, so...
But, it was just a guess from me as well, but sorry, carry on, Aaron.
I don't agree with it. It's a little bit disrespectful to the players. They play their hearts out every week for us. I know they didn't on Saturday, but they give their all, and it just wasn't for us on Saturday, and it's a little bit disappointment. But as for leaving the game early, to be honest, If I didn't need a lift home, I probably would have left too, because I couldn't sit and watch that. I just wanted to pluck my eyes out of my head. But I did. It was exactly the same as in Sheffield, like the last year, the year before. We got smashed, and then I started to just laugh and enjoy the game. So although it was a devastating defeat and we lost 2 points in the league, by the end of the game, I started to laugh about it. So, at the end of the day, it's a sport. I know we want to win every game, but it's really impossible to. I know I'm contradicting myself about a couple of weeks ago with the Fife incident, but I didn't boo them then. I just abused them. This is different.
fair enough. Well justified. I feel... not totally opposite, but pretty much opposite. And I know it's against the thoughts of a lot of people. I've got no issues with a performance like that being booed. And I was stood at the back of block 3. I think it was at the end of the first. And as the whistle went and the team got booed, I said quite loudly, good, you deserve to be booed. I don't think I've booed the team in the time I've been watching the Devils. And it's not very often that I've felt like that, but I think, you know, we're paying customers. At the end of the day, we are fans, but we're customers as well. And you deserve a certain level of service when you're a customer of anything. And you know, that minimum level is a bit of passion, a bit of desire, you know, not to win, not to walk every game, you know, not even to not get drubbed. We're going to get drubbed 5-0 in periods. It'll happen. But I think it's the way it happened. It was just so... It was like soul destroying to watch, and you are always going to get a reaction from that. I think, you know, the Devils, you know, are obviously a passionate crowd. We saw it Sunday the other way around. And you know, people, a lot of people said, "Oh, if we'd lost 8 on the bounce, 9 on the bounce, you'd understand it." And you know, I've seen Devils teams lose 8-9 games on the bounce, and have never felt as disappointed in a team, I don't think, as that, because they were teams that maybe didn't have the resources, didn't have the skill levels, didn't have the coaching, didn't have the facility, didn't have everything that this team has got. And I could not see a justifiable reason for that performance. And I of course they know, they're professional sportsmen. You know, Andrew Lord would have told them, Todd Kellman would have told them. But I was glad that the fans told them. And, you know, I know that's not a popular decision with a lot of people, but that is, you know, that's the way I look at it. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, you're professional sportsmen. They suck it up, you know, they haven't complained, but you just got to suck it up sometimes and, you know, take the rough with the smooth. That's my rant over, Sean.
Yeah, can't really say anything different. You know, I'm the same as yourself. I had a few people, you know, say that they were disappointed to hear people boo. Myself personally, I wouldn't boo the team. It's just not my, you know, I don't think that's the way of doing it. We regularly tweet about games, performances, individual brilliance, individual, you know, poor performances, all that sort of thing. And it's not something I would do because I think it maybe is a little bit of disrespect, but I can also see why some people would go about doing it. I don't have a problem with booing. I wouldn't do it myself because I can understand why people do it. And you know, these people aren't booing because they're fickle, right? They're doing it because they care, I think, and they want the team to know that they care. That's my attitude towards it. And as you said, all you want to do is to see them perform. You know, if we had lost that game, if we had played the way that we did against Sheffield on Sunday and lost 6-0. You know, say we played with the same, you know, heart and that sort of mentality and just bang bodies all night and look like we were trying and lost 8-0 to Sheffield. I don't think anyone would have booed.
Yeah, well, I think if it was following on the back of an 8-0, I think you might have got a couple just from the odd person. But, on the whole, I do agree with you, yeah. And if that was shown... As you said, you're going to get drubbed. I think Sheffield lost 8-0 at home to Nottingham last year. You know, it happens to all teams. Not necessarily losing.
It feels like it always happens to us.
It does feel like, and it's something that I maybe find a little bit concerning about the current setup, that we do seem to get drubbed a lot more than our, you know, main rivals. You know, obviously mentioned that one against Sheffield.
We'll make the point, though, that everyone else did when we lost 8-0 the night before, is losing 1-0 in this league is exactly the same as losing 8-0, 9-0, 10-0. It's a bit more soul-destroying, but if anything, it makes you realise you need to be better. If you lose 1-0, and you can always just say, you know, X, Y, Z was unlucky, this decision should have gone this way, yada, yada, yada. 8-0 shows nothing. That is down to you as a team underperforming.
Yeah, and I think we'd have seen a different Sunday if, when Nottingham had gone 2 or 3 nil up, they'd sat back and given a shooting, if you like, because I think that's the only way they weren't going to score anymore.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd have got that same reaction from the Devils, which is disappointing. I think you might have done. I think these drubbings happen because always seems to be when we've got an eye on another game. You know, we had it just after the Challenge Cup final, 11-0 in Sheffield. There was a drubbing in Sheffield early on last year as well, but I can't remember when that was. The 6-1 drubbing up in Nottingham 2 days before the Challenge Cup final, and now this the day before a massive game against Sheffield. It's as if we're struggling. We're saying all the right words. We're a game by game team. We're looking at the next game. We're not looking any further. But the results, when they happen like this, maybe suggest something else. And that's a little bit of a concern. And perhaps around the way the team are either being mentally prepared or the way that they're mentally preparing themselves, and they're being allowed to do that. So
yeah.
I don't know what the solution is. I don't even know if that's the cause, but it's maybe a sign of something that the club may look at as a longer term thing to try and rectify. Saying that, I would be interested in hearing all of your thoughts on on this subject. Obviously, I think it's quite an emotive one. It's something that whatever people feel, people usually feel quite passionately about, whether it's they do and think they should, whether you shouldn't at all, or sort of like myself, where wouldn't do it but I don't have a problem with it. It's something that I've never heard it talking about in a really blasé way. It's something that people get quite passionate,
very passionate about.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the type of thing that we love to see on our Twitter. So if you've got any thoughts, tag us in them, and we'll have a conversation about it. Well, we'll have a look at this weekend's games, and it's a weird weekend where we're playing the same teams that we've just discussed the games of. So the other way around this week, with Sheffield up first, as we said, a Sheffield team that are going to want to bounce back after probably feeling a little bit hard done by that, after dominating large spells of the game, only got their 1 point. They only had a 1 point weekend as well, which is definitely something they're going to want to bounce back from. And what we said, we didn't mention it in the Sheffield game, we were without, obviously we were without Chris Culligan for a while, but we were also without Sean Medivolio. So the Devils playing an import short for the first time in a while. And worth noting that even if Chris Culligan was fit, which I don't believe he is at the minute, he couldn't have played due to Bentivoglio being one of our three European passport holders. So there is the possibility this weekend of the Devils running an import short again, which obviously makes things a little bit difficult. It means that the fourth line will almost certainly involve Chris Jones and Luke Pigott having regular ice time, which may, no disrespect, but it makes that line a lot less productive. You're not likely to get goals chipped in. Mind you, Luke Pigott did have a fantastic breakaway chance on Sunday that I thought he did really well with, but didn't manage to put it past Moose. Aaron, you're Mr. Optimistic, obviously. Are you nervous for Sheffield coming in on the back of four straight defeats to us in the league? And, the response that they're going to want to give?
Definitely. I think, we've had, I wouldn't say so much luck, but the bounce has gone our way the last two games with, the disallowed goals and all the controversies and stuff. And I think in both the last two games, I genuinely do think that Sheffield's been the better team for the majority of both games. And it's only a matter of time before it turns around and bites on the bum. If we can start the way we started on Sunday, I'll be happy as long as we can carry it throughout the game. But the thing that was letting us down on Sunday was we was letting them skate into the zone easy and set up. We got to box them out a little bit better and keep them to the outside. If we do that, we're giving ourselves a chance. And, if we can get our scorers scoring like they did on Sunday, I don't see it being a difficult challenge, but I just want to see this power play go a little bit better. I know we didn't have many chances Sunday, and we did score on one, but the power play, in my opinion, has been lacking the most in our game, and if we can stomp that out, I can see us coming away with the points, because Sheffield, in my opinion, are a really indisciplined team, so see how it goes.
And Sheffield indiscipline is something that I did mean to touch on in discussing the game. And not so much necessarily the indiscipline, but their attitude to the referee. At one stage, it was after the too many men call at the start of the second, Paul Thompson was holding up three fingers and then doing a zero to Mike Hicks for as long as he could whilst shouting at him. And I just looked at him thinking, it's not the referee's job to make sure there's an equal number of penalties on each team. And then thinking, oh, if you think these borderline decisions are going against you and you're always shouting abuse at the referee, do you think maybe those two things could be linked? Because, you know, I think they might be, but Paul Thompson,
I think it's a general lack of respect for officials as well. I think I saw him bellowing at the linesman as well regarding the too many men call on Sunday. I think it was Sam Motton. Or an offside decision, what I think possibly an icing as well, and just didn't shut up all game. I can appreciate and understand the passion, but just, you know, have some respect, show some etiquette.
That's like, and it's seeping into his team. There were a couple of things. There was a call made, you know, really, oh, I can't remember what it was now, but a really obvious one, and Zach Fischeld's on the bench just throwing his arms in the air and then he's shouting. And at one stage, there was an icing and, all right, he was racing Doucette, who he's not probably not going to beat to the puck. But the liner waved it off and Fitzgerald stopped and shouted at the linesman as Deuce went and skated behind the net with a puck. Mm. And I just thought, how can a coach let his team get that indisciplined that he actually turned away from the puck to shout at a linesman? And you know, Paul Thompson could never, ever, ever call out a player for that because that's all he spends the game doing. Mm. And I don't know how he gets any coaching done with the amount of shouting he does. And I cannot remember the guy's name, the Swedish assistant.
Jerry Anderson.
That's the one. I knew it was something to do with Thunderbirds, and it is exactly the same name. that's why I should have remembered it. But he seemed like a calming influence, and he was the one talking to the players, and when they were shouting, he's putting an arm on their shoulder, you know, having a little chat with them. Whereas Paul Thompson is just having a tirade at the referee. I don't understand how you can coach a team like that. And Paul Thompson is the most successful coach in British ice hockey in the last 15 years. He must know something. You know, obviously is a very experienced coach, but I do not understand what he hopes to gain by doing that and how that frustration is ever going to help his team. So
I don't ever remember it being quite that bad in Coventry either.
No, that is true. It's definitely something that's happened more since he's come back, which is, you know, an interesting observation, whether that's to do with his time in Europe and different standards of officiating or the colour of the
that. Just about to make, yeah.
No, but, you know, interesting that we've had teams come over from higher standard leagues that he's reffed in, praising the officials that we've got. Mm. So, you know, that would be a strange reason. I'm just hoping for lots of borderline calls in the first period on Saturday that go against Sheffield. They don't even have to be borderline, just, you know, calls are going in Sheffield, because I think Aaron's right, that indiscipline is likely to sleep back in. And, you know, if we've got a strong enough referee, then, you know, they will undoubtedly fall foul of that, and hopefully we'll be in a position to take advantage.
Yeah.
And really, speaking of wanting revenge, so Sheffield won it Saturday. I think the Devils are going to go into Nottingham, regardless of what happens in the next game, Sheffield hurting, not just about the 8-0 drubbing, but about the four games we've had against Nottingham this year. As I said, we've scored in two periods against them, only scoring four goals. One of them was an empty netter. We've been shut out twice. It's not a pretty picture for Andrew Lord and the Devils facing Nielsen and the Panthers.
They are our bogey team for sure this year.
100%. And it's just, you know, one of those frustrating things that 8-0 shut out, they let five into Coventry the next night. It's just crazy. It's crazy. What are we doing? What are they doing to us? Or what are we not doing against them? It does not make sense. Everyone else scores goals for fun against Nottingham except for us. So I'd like to think that we could fix that. I'm not even going to use the words that I was about to say, but it's been announced today that Christian Kudrok, defenceman, has left the Panthers. He's a massive guy, so you can't help but notice him. Been really impressed with him, but, you know, due to illness of, I think it was his father, he's returned home to North America. So, you know, thoughts are obviously with him. It does leave a gap there defensively for them. You know, they're a team that are suffering with injuries already and believe that their new signing, Jason Williams, isn't due in until a bit later. You know, obviously visa's been sorted out and whatnot at the moment. So there's a weakness there, but you know, as you said, struggled to break him down, Sean. And yeah, I think Andrew Lord really needs to spend the week looking at videos of not just our games against them, but other teams, and try to find a way to break them down.
Yeah, well, what have other teams done so well that we haven't? And what have we done, you know, to cause ourselves problems that other teams haven't? It's, you know, there's got to be something in it. Why does Cornelius know how to shut our team down so well? And why don't other teams? You know, are we that predictable? Does Cornelius not get other coaches or other teams? Something doesn't quite add up, and I think we've got to sort of react to that, because, you know, we still got to play Nottingham a good few times this year. How many times have we played them? Four?
Five? Four times. One of those was a Challenge Cup game, so we've only played three league games against them.
And
so with this weekend, there's five games.
Have we beat them once? Or did we beat them in the
Cup? We beat them in the 30th anniversary game.
We lost in the home cup game. We lost in the away cup league, doubled up, and then we won that game. So we still got to play them, you know, including this one. We've got to play them five more times this year. So we're going to have to find a way to beat them if we want to win a league title this year.
Yeah, we can beat Sheffield every game, but if we lose every game to Nottingham, we're right back where we started.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we don't gain anything. Yeah, and Sheffield are beating Nottingham for fun at the moment. And you know, you do have to... I think you do need a bit of luck and other results to go your way. But first things first, we have to learn how to beat Nottingham, because... Five games, you know, 10 points. If we drop those 10 points, then that means that if Sheffield win all their games in hand, they go 9 points above us, or however many points above us it is. And if they don't win those games, but we do lose those games, they're still tight. They're still, you know, behind, you know, very close to us. It's very tight, and ultimately we just have to learn how to beat Nottingham, and we may end up facing them again in another cup stage again this year. So get on with it.
Simple. Get on with it.
Get on with it.
Aaron, do you agree? Do we need to just get on with it?
Yeah, we do. Because otherwise we're just going to get smashed again. And in my opinion, what I'd like to see, I know if we're still short-benched, it won't happen, but I just want Lord to stand behind the bench and watch the game, watch Corey Nielsen, what he does, how he can not conduct himself, because Lord, I think, conducts himself the best possible way in the league. But the way, you know, he does things, because I think the only coach that Lord struggles against is Corey Nielsen. You know, he very, very rarely, we very rarely beat them, and they're one of the better teams. And I think Lord can give, I know he's a great player. He's an easier top six forward in every team in this league. But I want to see him improve as a coach. I want to see him take a step behind the bench and motivate the players that way, you know. Tell, like, when he's on the ice, he can't see things that are happening. He can't see what people are doing right and what people are doing wrong. But if he's behind the bench, he's got a bird's eye view and he can do that. And in that game against Nottingham Saturday, I genuinely do think if he was behind the bench, it would have been a different result. He would have done things differently. You know, might have taken a time out. We might have swapped the lines about. I don't know. He could have done anything. But if he's there, he can see where things are going wrong, and he can tell them there and then what not to do and how to do it better.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I think if we were missing one player, I think he might take the risk of still running in port short. I do doubt it. I think, especially following Todd Kelman's interview, where he stated he would much rather see Lord on the ice.
I think that
puts pressure on Lord to be on the ice. But I think, you know, if we are still missing Benvolio and Chris Culligan, running three imports down, I think would be ridiculous anyway, even if that helps. But if Benty was back, do you take the risk and run one import short? It would be two, obviously, with Lord on the bench, not three, because one couldn't play regardless. Do you take the risk? And as I do think that there's pressure now on Lord not to stand on the bench following that interview, which, you know, it's got to be something that plays on his mind. I think we have had the conversation, we've done it to death, but, you know, would you be stands on the bench if you were Andrew Lord, if Benty and Culligan were unable to play on Sunday, Sean?
No, I think I don't think Andrew Lord should play, because I don't think that we should put that on ourselves to be in that situation. But I think the way that the game is managed has to be better, because if you know, Nottingham are another defenseman down, if they go up in the game, they're gonna trap, and they're gonna contain. And it's all about how we adapt to that, how we try and break the trap, how we go about our game, you know, how many bodies we throw in front of that. Lord's a very, very good, talented player, and he does bring our team up. He scores some big goals. He's a very passionate guy, emotional guy, and I think that's good for the team. But I also think that the game management needs to be there against a very good Nottingham team, who have two bench coaches. You know, they've got, well, in the sense they have three at the moment, because they've got Corey Nielsen, you've got Rick Strachan, and you've also got David Clark, who's injured, who's a player assistant coach. So, you know, you've got, you know, and Clark is a Nottingham legend. You know, you've got that sort of captain, that Nottingham hero, that sort of guy to G you up. And then you've got the tactician that Corey Nielsen is, the defensive mind of Rick Strachan. And ultimately, I think they're a better team for it, and their game management is very, very good. If we're down in that game, then I think that in the third period, maybe Andrew Lord should retreat to the bench for parts of it, bench himself, and make sure we manage it and try and get a best sort of result out of that game that we can.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of looking at it, and sort of the way we change it rather than just...
We have to switch things up rather than go with what's not... If something hasn't worked, rather than being persistent, I think we have to adapt, try different things, and then maybe go back to it. We said at times last year, we were very one-dimensional and weren't very good at adapting to the changes in the game. And that's the big test for me. I completely agree with you.
Right, there we have it. So we'll say it again. I don't think we've said it yet, but a big weekend coming up for the Devils. As we
is it a big weekend? You never said.
No, it's funny. I hadn't mentioned it. So I thought, now we're at the end. We'll just have
it. A quiet weekend.
I'm not sure when we're having one. I'm sure we've got one scheduled in at some stage.
Late April.
I don't know, first weekend of April, we have only got one game against Dundee in the league. So, while it's important, I don't think I'll cast that as big. It's only one game. So, yeah. Stay tuned for a non-big weekend, folks. But that is everything. Thank you again to everyone who got involved on Twitter with your Rahmite suggestions. Make sure you keep them coming through over the weekend as we play Sheffield and Nottingham, and let us know your thoughts on the crowd booing situation, what you think about that. For now, though, from Sean, Aaron and myself, thank you for listening. That is your Red Army Roundup. The devil inside, every single one of us, the devil inside.